It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Good morning. Another great week here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. This week we're going to be focusing on, we're getting closer and closer and closer and closer and closer to the election, and are we going to talk about it at all? I don't know. Somebody makes me. The one thing that I wanted to make sure that we did get to talk about is this war thing. I mean, today we're going to spend some time on that. First, we'll have Caitlin Flannery. Caitlin Flannery. She is with thepeacealliance.org, and she wants to have a cabinet-level position for peace. We'll talk about that. And then in the second hour, we're going to have Eric Garris, the founder of antiwar.com. We've had him on before, a long time, know what's what, been at it for, a couple of decades at least. And it's going to be an interesting conversation in light of all the news that's going on now. Then for our last guest is going to be Brad Friedman. Now, Brad Friedman, he is with bradblog.com, and we've had him on several times. There's an enormous attention right now on electronic vote fraud. In fact, in Washington, D.C., they tried to bring up a system and said, here, try and hack it. Go ahead. And they go, okay, boom, hacked it. And they go, never mind. So this is, here it comes. And you want peace? I tell you, are you going to be able to represent your desire at the ballot box? I don't think so. And I think it's going to have to be taken to the streets. But we have Caitlin. She thinks it has to be taken to the White House and get a shiny badge. I got you there, Caitlin?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Okay, Caitlin. Executive Director, Arizona Peace Alliance. The mission is to empower civic activism for creating a culture of peace locally and globally. It supports nonviolence education programs and inspires participation in a grassroots campaign to establish a cabinet level of the executive branch, U.S. Department of Peace. So is that your end goal? Is we're going to get another chair around the war room, and it'd be a peace chair in the war room?
I would say that we're not so much attached to the creation of a cabinet level as much as acknowledging that in order for us to get to the place that we want, ultimately creating a culture of nonviolence, whether the State Department takes it on or whoever, but something needs to be done at that level. So yes, we believe that it needs to happen at that level.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, if we're gonna get to that level, you're gonna have to have already created the culture of peace anyway. They're not gonna do anything unless the people are demanding it. And if you get to the point to where the people are demanding it, I wouldn't want them in charge of it. You know what I mean? I mean, you create this. It's kind of like the Tea Party thing. You have all these people out in the streets, and then all of a sudden Fox News and Clear Channel says, hey, yeah, we're in charge of these people. I can see the Obama White House, doing the same thing, or the next one, or whoever. It doesn't make any difference. I don't need them to represent me, but I want to ask you this. What happened to the anti-war movement? Where is it?
You know what? It's certainly not underground, but it is certainly quiet, I guess, because of, like you said, like Fox News and news agencies such as themselves who have an agenda, if you will, for how they spin their news, and they're not particularly middle line and just reporting news for what it is. We don't get much airtime, but I can tell you that it actually is alive and well. It's very much in the grassroots, in the hands of the grassroots people, which means it's under the radar. But I don't think it's going to be that way for very long. And it's, I just wanted to kind of call you out on a little point there, that my personal perspective with regards to when you say you don't want those people telling me how to, you know, run my life or whatever. I believe that the government is a direct reflection of the life choices that we as individuals make. And they, it's not them against us. They're no less human beings with the same sort of, initiations into life and upbringing and influences than the rest of us. So
you know,
I think that when the people take their lives back into their own hands and make better choices for themselves, that the government will start to reflect to that, because those types of people will start to be elected into that position.
In your opinion. Okay.
In my opinion, yeah.
Now, Caitlin, you and I have had long discussions on this before. I'm glad we have a chance to have you come on, and we'll discuss. Now's a good time to do it. And you can see how, you know, serendipity has blessed us with the lineup for today. I mean, we have you. You know, we're talking about, you know, having a culture of peace that would produce a culture of peace at a cabinet position. Then we have Eric Garris, that's been decades, I mean, hardcore, nose of the grindstone, antiwar.com, you know, been living this real life under various administrations. Then we have Brad Friedman to talk about what you're talking about is, you know, our voice and how, you know, and elections. So I'm going, look at it from my perspective. If we have a culture of peace that is instilled in the people, that it's out here, to have a there's going to be an attempt to try and bottle that. There's going to be an attempt to make it a voting block. There's going to, as a matter of fact, it happened. It was Obama, I'm for peace. Well, how'd that work out? So, you know, he was elected, and so were the Democrats in 06. They were elected on the promise that they're going to stop these wars. That has not happened. What they do is they take and they embody it, they bring it into Washington, say we control it now, and then they let it die. That's exactly what has already happened. It's not like I gotta wait and see if it's gonna happen. I already know it's gonna happen. They already did it. So what's your
response? I absolutely 100% agree with you. Again, though, I have to say I'm not of the mindset where I'm going to be the victim as a citizen and say that the government did this. If I want to create change, I have to have a voice. If I want to have a voice, I need to have other people. As long as people are not willing to get together and create a voice and allow for things to happen, then we deserve to have happen what happens to us, because we are not powerless. We are powerful, but people do not live in their power. For example, during the second Bush election in that state, this country should have come to its knees and halted everything that next day and said that that was not a fair election. We want a recall. That didn't happen. It was like, oh, this sucks. This is a bitch. Let's just, life moves on. We're victims. We're not victims.
No, I understand. You know, I understand. You think I'm disagreeing with you, and I'm not. I see the power, but when you get it in the hands of the people and the people demonstrate it to make the end goal a package with a nice bow on it that you're going to hand to an administration, that's the mistake. I would never turn over this created angst, this created culture that you have demonstrated and got the people behind it, and then hand it to the government. I'm like, heck no. That happened both times, and we suffered for it. We'll talk about it more with Caitlin when we come back in just a little bit. We need a peace movement. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Love ain't the same on the south side of town. You could look, but you ain't gonna find it around. It's the same old story, same old song and dance, my friend. It's the same old story, same old story, same old song and dance.
I've heard it before. Happens, you know, we have the same old story, same old song and dance. We're gonna get the government to start doing whatever it is that we want them to do with the voting block and the power and whatever that we demonstrate to them, when they should be doing it anyway. And that's what Caitlin Flaherty is working to do. It's the peacealliance.org. Now here in Arizona, we have the Arizona AZ peace. Now, go ahead and give out. Now, which one do you want to promote the most? I mean, how do you want to be known here on the show? Which website would you like them to go to, Caitlin?
ThePeaceAlliance.org.
PeaceAlliance.org, ThePeaceAlliance.org.
Correct.
Now, let's go ahead and talk, because you and I want the same thing. You know, I want to stop spending money on wars. I want to stop killing people. I want people to stop being killed. I want. Now, the thing is that they know that that's what we want, the majority want. That's why they campaign on that. That's why they say, especially the Democrats at the time, when Pelosi came in to get the Democrats in control in 06, the first thing they did was to keep funding the wars. Then you have Obama gets in on the wave of that. We're going to stop the war, and then we expanded the wars. So I'm wondering, why would we want to give any kind of credence or in charge or a shiny badge to these people in the name of peace? What would that accomplish?
I think the missing component here is, I see where you're coming from, and based on your perspective, I would agree with if that were the scenario, but I think part of having this Cabinet Department of Peace, just in its infrastructure alone, it would change the interface of how government works, keeping a higher, well, not even a higher, but existing level of transparency, which does not exist in government. They don't operate transparently. And I think the Department of Peace, the Cabinet-level Department of Peace, would require transparency, accountability, and it would require interagency or interoffice participation. It's not just one cabinet in there dictating how things are going to be. It's actually going in, taking what already exists, and improving upon it. So it's really not like trying to grow a third arm on the government's body as much as it is just trying to coordinate the two that are already there centrally, like being the heart of it and bringing the Department of Defense together and the State Department together, because they don't deal domestically with the violence that occurs here. And quite honestly, my little personal tagline has always been that I agree with you. We will never be a nation of people who don't go to war in response to conflict internationally until we ourselves individually clean up our own backyards here. But as long as we've got the gang violence going on that we do, the school bullying situation, the suicide rates going on, just the aggression on the road, all of that stuff is indicative of violence, of a violent nature that's pervasive and getting worse. So how could I say to you in all honesty that, oh yeah, we will be a nation that doesn't go to war until, you know, we clean it up here?
You know, and I know we agree with each other. We just have different focuses and attentions and, I would say, confidence in our government. And I already know not to give them anything. I because they have bastardized it, you know, from the they're already thinking while they're even contemplating, while you're talking to them, they're already thinking of how they're going to screw us with it. And I'll give you an example. Before World War II, it was known as the War Department. I mean, certainly from the beginnings of the country, it was War Department, War Department, War Department, and we were generally at peace. It wasn't until it was Department of Defense that we're out raging war all the time. So it doesn't matter what you call it. I mean, you would have the cabinet position, Peace Alliance, De La Peace, Peace and Doves, and they wear, you know, all kinds of frilly tie-dye, you know, psychedelic long hair with headbands and so on. Doesn't make any difference if they're working with the Pentagon in, you know, giving us all kinds of, we wish we could. We tried everything. We did sanctions and this and that and everything. Now we got to go bomb the crap out of Iran. And it would just be another tool, another weapon for them, because I'll guarantee you, whenever you create a regulative body, and, you know, be it the Security Exchange Commission, or you have it the FDIC, or you have this department of, the overseers of, and whatever on Wall Street, the bad guys become in charge of it. And if you have a Department of the Peace, I'll guarantee Donald Rumsfeld or his clone is going to be there as the head of it with a shiny tie telling you how, oh, gosh darn it, we tried really hard. Sorry, we're at war. So I'm going, I see the focus as, and the goal of the people becoming more peaceful to create a peaceful culture. I'm with you, sister, man. I'm all over it. But as an end goal, or thinking that, you know, we would claim a victory by having that taken over by the federal government and say, yes, we have embraced it. And you know, look to us now. You need not have. I already saw what happened. It was called the 06 and the 08 election cycle.
Right. So my question then to you would be, what is kind of the moral of the story? Do you abolish government? I mean, my thing is...
That'd help.
Right. No. Now, it's not ridiculous, because based on what I'm hearing you say, and I'm actually not personally in disagreement with you, with the nature of the people who reside in our U.S. government, that nature of people with the mindset that they have and the policies that they have put forth, they have proven, obviously, that they do not support what we're working towards. So, again, I say to you that I would say go to the people, start teaching nonviolent education programs in K-12 or K-college, and teach critical thinking, and actually work from a place of, can we turn the mindset of people around? Because the people that we're putting in office, again, are just a reflection of the lifestyle that we have of greed, of not enough, of lack, of power, of bullying. Right? They're just a reflection of all of that's going on. So my thing is a lot of what the Department of Peace would do is get into the education system and start, I guess you would say, I'm not going to say that they would brainwash kids, but they would offer another perspective that fosters a healthier mindset instead of this greed-oriented bullying. I come from a place of lack, so I have to take what you have, instead of looking for a way to create it for themselves or look for the mindset of win-win situations. We are living in a culture where it's not win-win, it's I need to beat you.
Well, let's go ahead and ask. This is where we're going to get into an interesting conversation, because as a libertarian, you're not going to get me advocating that we're going to take money from someone to redistribute so they can even send their kids to school and me fund them when I don't have any kids in school anyway. But the thing is that, you know, let's think about it. What if you had a culture of peace? We have to define what that means. Because if we define what peace is, it's the non-aggression principle. You're not initiating force against someone. You're not, you know, all this libertarian stuff. Well, what happens is that then your government schools, your welfare schools, your mandatory youth indoctrination camp leader tell you what to think schools, all of a sudden they're advocating for peaceful, so you can't put a 45 to someone's head, take their money, redistribute it, and think that you're the good guy. Once you start doing that, the entire culture changes from young minds being exposed to what violence really is. And the fact that they got a shiny tie on and the always available embossed seal on some parchment, and they show up at your front door and say your children now belong to the man to go fight some war somewhere, or where's your money, or you owe us, and we're gonna see all that stuff, all that government support goes away. And the one thing that I want to make sure that when we come back from this next break we talk about is what happens if we really, really get what you're really asking for: no initiation of violence. You know, when you get to that, all of a sudden you start finding out that maybe the discussion is the elimination of government. They are the most violent institution and will always be. So, I mean, you know, I just want you to start thinking about that, because when we come back, I'm going to be asking you this very point. What if we got exactly what you wanted? All of a sudden, then we're starting to think about maybe we can just do away with it all and live in peace. When you go, yeah, but you would have chaos. I mean, the worst thing they can scare me with is, you know, riots or something, or people arguing over a fence line or something. Well, I can show you hundreds of millions of people killed by their own governments in just this last century. That's what I got to put on the table. What do you got? We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with my good friend Caitlin Flaherty talking about peace.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
I want to break free. I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied, I don't need you. I've got to break free.
Break free really, 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 really bad. Well, you know, part of the freedom, you know, we've had this discussion before. What is more desirable, more important? Is it freedom or peace? And, you know, it's prompted a lot of really good discussions. And a lot of times you're going, which one produces the other more? You know, let's talk about that a little bit. You know, I have Caitlin Flaherty on. She's executive director of the Arizona Peace Alliance that wants to empower people to create a culture of peace that would then be like a block of influence that would be sought out by, I don't know, people of influence. And I'm going, well, I kind of seen that happens over and over and over. And they just corrupt it, co-opt it, use it, make it a voting block, you know, abuse it, and then cut it loose, and it goes away. So I want to ask the question, Caitlin, what is your definition of peace? How would you define that?
Oh, my goodness, that's very broad. And I think peace is being able to live who you are and how you are without fear of retribution.
You know, that's one of the definitions they go, you know, peace is not just the absence of war. And I'm, let's say you're, you know, you got to define these words so you know what it is that you're asking for. I mean, you know, we want to have peace, and I'm going, okay, well, you can have peace in a totalitarian regime. You know, that's their goal. They want to have no violence against them, of course. They want to have nobody in the streets causing a ruckus. They want people, I mean, here, take your pill. I got peace. I mean, you know, so is peace really the goal, or does it produce, you know, freedom? Well, probably not. I mean, peace is just, you know, the absence of violence. It may not be freedom. You know, so if we say, okay, we have the, you know, freedom to do whatever we want, well, does that produce peace? You can make that argument that, you know, you're not really free until you have the protection of your rights to be free and nobody can aggress against you. So we go, okay, so maybe it's lack of aggression, okay? Maybe it's lack of, you know, it's a non-aggression principle. You know, there's no initiation of force or fraud. Well, that gives you both peace and freedom, but then you get that libertarian definition goes in there. I mean, how afraid are you of libertarianism, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, the difference between an anarchist and a libertarian is about 6 or 7 years if you're paying attention. So, I mean, you know, what is it? Do you think there's a need for government to accomplish some other social justice issues that you want? I mean, what do you want government for?
You know what? It's kind of like my kind of... Not to get you off course, but just to use it as an analogy, my stance on abortion, personally, I'm against abortion, but based on the way that we live our lifestyles today, I am more pro-choice than I am abortion. But if we lived in a different society where people made better choices as individuals, if they were taught better choices, because I don't think choices, you're born and you just make healthy choices. If it's not exemplified in your family unit first, and then when you go to school, and it's not exemplified there, people don't make those choices in their best interest. They will make choices that are aggressive and about survival. And the same thing with peace. Now, to answer your question about government, I think because of what we have to work with today, I think it makes logic sense to me to start there and also not exclude at all the importance of developing a mindset of people who understand what a nonviolence community is, and eventually maybe we could be a society of people that wouldn't need such a bloated government.
Well, no, I'm trying to, you know, we got to get there one way or another. I mean, it's going to happen, you know, one way or another. I just, you know, what's the goal? I mean, if you make peace your ultimate goal and then you hand it over to the government, they'll go, okay, we got peace, which is defined by them, of course. And I guarantee it'll be, you know, no one in the streets bullying like you were talking about before. We have all this bullying. We have, you know, suicides due to the pressure put on people by different things. You have all this aggression against people and all of a sudden, you know, we want that to stop. Well, if I get a government big enough, they think they can do it, they'll make the attempt, but I'm going, you know, are we really getting peace? And certainly will we get freedom? So I'm trying to get a definition of peace that would be, you know, sustainable. I mean, I can see the culture that we're trying to create amongst people. I mean, we raise our children and hopefully a way that bullying's bad, you know, aggressing against other people, taking their stuff, stealing, property violations. I mean, you know, I'm looking, you know, to have peace, we have to have a culture that is able to sustain it. And what is that culture? What are we looking to do? You have to share. You know, we have the, this environmental thing that it was a big issue last week coming out of the United Kingdom. It's called, you know, 10-10. You need to lower your carbon footprint. And they had, kid, who's going to participate in lowering their carbon? Oh, yeah, I want to do it, miss. You know, I want to be part of it, teacher. And the kids that don't, they blow them up. I mean, so is that where we're going? I mean, you know, I'm going, you know, you could have what you want, or certainly they would advocate it. But I'm just like, is that really what we get? You know, there's something more fundamental behind peace and freedom and so on. It's the way we are. So I'm wanting to know, as you're advocating this, as you're going through levels of government, as you're meeting with heads of state, as you're doing this, which I know you are, this is what you've been doing. I get your emails a lot. I know that you're out there working hard on this. What is it you're working on? I mean, is it to create a shiny badge in government, or is it a cultural change? And if you have that cultural change, what's the seed that you start with?
Well, if we have a cultural change, I think you will see that government will have to change, because the people going into government will already be embodying those principles within their daily lives. And again, it brings my point that until we have people who are willing to make changes in their daily lives, and that means people that go to Fortune 500 companies, for example, as I worked on Wall Street, it dawned on me that if I take a box of pens as one employee, and then the next 5,000 have the same mindset, that you financially bankrupt over a period of time that company by taking office supplies. But yet we justify it by saying that this company makes so much money that they can afford, you know, me taking a box of pens or a stapler or legal pads or whatever. And it's something that simple is really not trivial. It's my point in case is that we have to start teaching people values of what happens down the road. What is the ripple effect of my choice of taking from somebody else what they earned?
Okay, now this is, you know, you're stepping into my web, okay? I'm just, you know, just a warning. Because if you take that, which I certainly agree with you, that it's wrong to steal from someone their property, you know, can you justify the IRS agent tax collecting government man with a 45 to my head that says, yeah, but as long as I got this piece of paper that says I can do it, I can do it. You see my point?
Yes.
So
when you have different people who understand the principles and the values of the win-win mentality of, oh, okay, I want this, but you want that, so how can we meet in the middle? When you start to have that mindset, and that is the pervasive operating mindset of the human being, that human being goes into government, and you'll start to see change in government. So I'm not really disagreeing with you. Based on how government shows up today and the people involved, they are a reflection of how we show up in our daily lives. You look at parenting. Parenting is a huge bullying system in many regards. Many people, when they parent, they bully their child to do what they want them to do.
No, I understand. I'm with you, sister. I understand where we're going with this. I just want to make sure that, because I know you to be, you know, progressive. I mean, you know, you want to have, if you're going to have a government, they shouldn't be dropping bombs. They should be spending the money on more productive things and so on. And I'm always looking, you know, from the more root cause of this is they're not able to do this if they didn't steal from me to begin with. And I don't want them to be stealing from me to do, you know, whatever noble cause they got. You know, George Bush's noble cause was we're going to go bomb somebody, and somebody else's noble cause is they're going to go do maybe something not as egregious, but they're still stealing from me. So I'm wanting to get to a basis, because I think you're right. There is a base cultural understanding that needs to start to be pervasive throughout our culture that would manifest itself, you would think, in government. But I've never seen that happen. What happens is they will mouth the words in order to get the support of even a majority of the people that want it. But it's always the worst sorts that seek any kind of wearing of the ring of power, to get behind the lever of power. Nobody ever addresses the fact that it's the ring or the lever that's the problem. You know, just because you change the person behind the lever doesn't mean that you're all of a sudden they're going to be good. They still got the lever, and all the lever is a hammer, you know. Everything's a nail. So I understand what you're saying. I'm just going what the end result would be if we're looking for government to take on this movement that you could be successful in creating. You're successful. I want to stay as far away from them as possible, because I know what they're going to do with it.
Okay, so how would you implement change then? How would you change that?
Exactly the way you're saying.
Government does run the country, so how do you change what's running the country?
That's a good thing to start off with when we come back. How do you change the country being run the way it is? Let me tell you the first thing. Is you stop running it. We'll talk about it more when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Caitlin Flaherty. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
I'm about peace, freedom, justice, the American way, wherever the heck that was. You know, I want to make sure that we understand that if we're going to have this country, what's it going to be about? What's it of? What are we looking at? And this, as we went in off of the last segment, my guest, Caitlin Flaherty, is the executive director of the Arizona Peace Alliance. And I just want to, you know, she has, well, how do you run the country? You know, so I ask you, Caitlin, how would you run the country?
I would start with what we have. We, in large part, have identified as a movement that being against, truly against something or telling them that they're completely wrong or bad, it's just not effective. Even if it's a personal belief that how it is you're wrong. It's not about I have to be right and you have to be wrong. It's how can we make it better? And I think the name calling and the whole thing, it's again, that's a feeling, but it's ineffective in actually creating change. So the change is, the reality of the matter is this is how this government has been run since the beginning of the creation of the Constitution and all that. So we have to work with it to get it to change. So I was asking you then in turn, because what we want to do is get in there to create and inspire change, both in the government but also within the individual citizen, to empower them to believe that they have the power to create change. And the largest example that we have of that being successful is the civil rights movement. That was a hugely successful, albeit very long-standing movement, but it did effectively create change for a group of people that were classified as a subclass of people.
You know, I think I understand your point, but I don't see it as the culture somehow gets into the government. It's the government responds to the culture being changed. So I'm more about changing the culture. When you ask the question, you know, how would you run the country? Well, I wouldn't. I don't want to run it. I don't want to. See, that's one thing. This libertarian mindset is, I don't want to be a slave, and I don't want to be master of slaves. I don't want to, you know, I want to take the ring of power and chuck it in the fires of Mordor. I mean, you know, I don't want to wear it. I don't want anybody else wearing it. You know, it's that culture. We need to use the power to make fill in the blank. We need to use the power to have better whatever. We need to use the power to. But what people don't think about is, by creating or advocating, even having that power, the worst sort of people are going to gravitate towards it. The worst sort of people are going to seek it, get it, and they will go through the worst sorts of whatever machinations they need to get it. So I'm much more leaning, especially as time has gone on, that if you work on the culture of the individual and exactly what you're doing, but not seek to change the government or be part of it or get some kind of sanction or reaffirmment or some kind of something, you know, that they approve of it, and you just screw them, you just go to the individual, the people. That's where it has the most impact, and the bad guys know it. That's why they come in, and they'll even foster it, they'll help it, they'll grow it, they'll consolidate it, put it under an umbrella, have it behind a candidate, and then all of a sudden, it goes away. Mm-hmm. It's the plan. That's how it works. It's a collectivization of this stuff. Democratization, decentralization, you never can stop a movement. That's why this Ron Paul Revolution thing was so pervasive and so expansive, because it wasn't part of anything. It was individuals. And the more they try to control that, the more it'll go away. And we're going to find out, you know, here in this next election cycle, what happens. You know, they're going to try to bring it together. They already did it with the Tea Party thing. They're already starting to, you know, do whatever they're going to do with that. I'm very interested to see what happens here, because I'm in it for the long term. I want to see what happens. Hopefully we'll learn something from this, and people with the passion and the influence such as you will hopefully learn something from it too. To get what you want is to run away from government. Run away. Go to the individual. Try and get to the youth outside of the institutions, outside of the government, outside of the schools, outside. Change the culture, and we'll have a lot better future. I don't see any other way, in fact.
I would have to agree with that. That's my personal passion, is not so much advocating the government as to getting into the schools and educating people and giving. And when I say educating, I mean really it's kind of like going to college and taking a sociology course and really, really challenging one's belief systems about what they believe and why they believe it. And, you know, is it self-serving? Does it serve humanity? You know, who does it actually serve, your belief system? And do you even make choices that support your belief system? So I absolutely agree with you there. And again, I would hope that because of that grassroots movement that we would at best change the face of government, because I don't see a movement to disband government. So again, my thing is, well, then I have to work with what I have right here and right now.
Well, see, there's a movement to ignore them. I mean, I'll give you an example. We're in election cycle right now here in Arizona. I would imagine that there's probably a candidate or two or a party or something that's, you know, they take your calls. They're like, yeah, you know, Caitlin, you know, it's nice to have you come by and what can you do for me? I mean, you know, I'm sure there's some people in politics here in Arizona that you're communicating with. Am I right?
Yes, correct.
So this is, you know, when you take what you have and the people and the influence that you have, it's use them and their campaign as a launch or a vehicle to educate and create, you know, a different culture here. How many minds can you free? How many minds can you expose to water, whether running or not? Use them instead of always being used. And that's what a lot of activists, you know, miss. That's why we've been so successful for so many years, is we use them to further the education of the individual, as opposed to taking what we have to offer and furthering the political career of the scumbags. You know, I mean, I'll let the guys run on whatever and advocate and bring and push and have a gathering of, so that we can go and pass out a bunch of DVDs. I mean, you know, I don't have a problem with that. We use the political process, but to make the political process the goal, or to think that these people that, you know, we have all these congressional candidates, I'll guarantee you, there isn't going to be somebody outside of the system that goes to Congress. That, you know, you don't go to Congress unless you're part of the system or going to be, you know. So this is, I'm with you, and I want to work together with you, and that's why I wanted to have you on the show and kind of share these things with you, because I see what's coming. It's going to get a lot worse. They're going to be distracting us with a lot more war. They're going to be spending a lot more of our money and our lives on fill-in-the-blank war, be it from, you know, Iran or from Alpha Centauri with the, you know, special green space aliens they'll cook up just to make sure that, you know, we got all consolidated worry and fear, and it came from outside kind of thing. I put nothing past these people, but I don't want to give them the power, and by advocating, working with them, or looking for them to give you some kind of sanction, you give them the power instead of the effort going towards freeing individual minds, which I know you're good at. You keep doing that. Hey, I got all kind of, you need to come down here to Freedom's Phoenix Workshop. I'll show you how we can help.
No, that's one of my that's wonderful, and I do believe that's the vision that I hold and that we hold systematically. Mike, I wonder though if one of the failures in this whole conversation, not between us, but in the system, has been that the individual citizen does not hold the government accountable. That's where I said that I want to jump in and let people know that they have certain powers, certain rights, and they can create change. But oftentimes people, they'll vote. If you can get them to even vote, first of all, that's a milestone. Then once they vote, they just sit there, throw up their hands, and go, see, it didn't matter. It didn't make a difference. And my thing is because you just stopped. You just stopped being empowered. You stopped. You gave up. You walked away. And that's to me where the biggest thing where the individual has failed the government.
Well, you know, I don't vote. I haven't voted since 2002, but I've run for office. I mean, 2004, I ran against John McCain. I mean, and it was very clear. And I got the highest vote totals for third party in the nation. And they go, how'd you do that? I told people to not vote. I mean, you know, so it doesn't matter. I'm advocating for how many minds I can free. That's where the influence is. That's where the power is. If I think that I'm going to be able to, if you think you're going to be able to vote yourself free, you have not been paying attention. They don't care. It's, individual mind. So it's not that I think they've given up. Most of the people here putting up all these signs you see around Arizona and the Valley and all this kind of stuff, most of these people don't vote. They vote by putting up a sign, by freeing minds. That's where they know they have the impact. And it's much more satisfying. They know that it was counted. You want to know it's kind of, you know, I get so much pleasure in having my voice heard. You know, to make sure that they see what I'm advocating. This last Saturday, dozens of people here making a whole bunch of signs. They'll start going up this week. You know, and where will we put them up? We'll focus them in the East Valley, you know, around where, you know, certain legislators need to be focused on. So the thing is that what kind of impact does that have? We have one of my favorites. You'll like this, Caitlin. It says in the Star Wars font, it says, "Stop Wars with Darth Vader wearing an Uncle Sam top hat." You know, so, you know, these are the kinds of impacts that we can have, and I want to work with you. Will you come by and visit with me sometime?
Absolutely.
Give me a call, and you just come by. We'll show you all the resources we have to help you have an impact like not later. Caitlin Flaherty, go ahead and give out the website you want people to go to.
PeaceAlliance.org, and thank you so much, Ernest, for having me on. It was a pleasure.
PeaceAlliance.org. Let's have an alliance. An alliance for peace. I'm all for that. I just don't want to give it to the bad guys because I know what they're going to do with it. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with Eric Garris from AntiWar.com. We'll see you in just a little bit.